This is the NFL Draft Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub. Sponsored by Carrier. Turn to the experts and the Peterson School. Now, here's the voice of the New England Patriots, Bob Soucy.
And good morning, everyone. We welcome you into our studios, Bob Soucy, with our producer, Dan Lifshatz. As you just heard, Marshall Hook is on the headlines this hour. And it's great to have you with us after 3 days of the 2018 draft unfolded, giving the Patriots 9 picks overall in 5 rounds. They used 5 of them on offense, 4 on defense. They made a franchise record 8 draft day trades, netting, in fact, 3 picks in 2019, which we'll get to a bit later on, including a second-round selection from the Chicago Bears. We'll also take stock of what they selected and what they accrued in the last couple of days. A bit later, hearing from Player Personnel Director Nick Caserio and some of the players themselves, and I'll talk with Chris Price from the Boston Sports Journal. But first, as we open the show, let's begin with opening night. And the Pats' top 2 picks from the University of Georgia, offensive lineman Isaiah Wynn and running back Sony Michel. And we do it with Chip Towers, who covers those 2 young men for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution and writes as well for DogNation.com. You can follow Chip on Twitter at ChipTowersDN. Chip, good morning. Welcome to the show. Thanks for your time.
Oh yeah, it's no problem at all. I'm eager to inform some people about Isaiah Wynn and Sony Michel. Good guys.
I took that from your reply when I asked you if you had time to be on the show. You said, I'd be honored to discuss those 2 men. Why would you be honored to discuss Isaiah Wynn and Sony Michel? Tell us about the people as well as the players.
Well, that's where it starts and ends with those 2 guys. Sony has just been an amazing transformation where you kind of see the importance of college. Both of these kids are from Florida, came a long way to go to the University of Georgia. Sony Michel was one of those guys that, you know, became a legend as a 9th grader at Plantation High down in Miami. Mark Richt went down there and recruited him. Actually, Brian McClendon, the running backs coach at the time, and he was a 5-star, and he came with considerable reputation. And I can't remember his Twitter handle, Flystack 2 or something like 2 Flystack, whatever it is. But he likes to rap. There were a lot of probably preconceived notions that you had about him. Turns out he was like the consummate team player, always in the shadow of Nick Chubb and Todd Gurley and other backs, yet, you know, at times outshined all those guys with his versatility. You always saw the pro potential in him because he was such an incredible weapon with the pass game out of the backfield. And, I think definitely that's what Bill Belichick and the Patriots saw in him more than anything else. I mean, there was a time when in Mark Richt in the early years when you had Todd Gurley and Nick Chubb kind of carrying the load in the backfield, and they utilized Sony as a flanker. And it seemed like he scored every time he got the ball in that capacity. A really, really incredible player, but comes his background, his story, which I'm sure will be told there eventually. He's from first generation parents, immigrants, and from Haiti, I believe it is. And it's just come such a long way. And then, of course, made the decision he could have gone out as a junior, but he made the decision to come back and help Georgia get to a championship, and they did. And Isaiah Wynn is similar, a guy that wasn't really hugely recruited, but, came as a guard, played tackle, left tackle as a junior out of necessity because of some injuries and situations Georgia had there, and did so well at it. He comes back as a senior. Georgia had recruited all kinds of big 6'6", 350 types to play left tackle, but none of them could beat out Isaiah. I mean, he was unbelievable. As a senior, I think he only gave up 4 sacks total, none to Alabama in the championship, maybe none in the postseason, I don't think, which would be the SEC championship game, semifinals and finals. Just an incredible guy who doesn't have the typical tackle stature, but, he's got a square body, unbelievable feet and hands, and just a great punch. But same thing, just a team guy, never said a whole lot about himself. And those 2 guys together, as I'm sure you've learned, are good buddies. They were roommates and love each other. And so it's really cool from a Georgia standpoint, and certainly for those guys' standpoint, to be both headed up to New England.
Yeah, they wouldn't commit to being roommates now in New England, but suggested they might be neighbors at least. And they're guys that come from a program that has provided the Patriots high-character players like David Andrews and Malcolm Mitchell, who made the adjustment as a rookie receiver in a position where it usually takes a long time to earn Tom Brady's trust. Is there a common denominator between the two guys who were already in place here and the two young men who are joining them, and as well the coaches that you mentioned? Mark Richt recruited those two guys, and Kirby Smart coached them at the end of their careers.
Yeah, well, a couple of things. And Ben Watson, too, you know, played up that way. And, they got a thing down here they call the Georgia way, you know, and it's, everybody's got their thing. But I think Georgia does a really good job of not just developing the player but developing the men. That started with Mark Richt more than anybody else, and it's continued with Kirby Smart. And now, listen, Kirby Smart and Bill Belichick have a great relationship, and everybody knows that Bill Belichick doesn't take players because of where they're from or who his buddies are. But when Bill Belichick is down here, and maybe he does this everywhere, but for Georgia's pro days, he really takes an active position. I mean, you might have read about him. I mean, he was leading several drills when he came to Georgia this year, and you could tell that he was really interested in a few of the guys. Here, I was surprised. He really worked the outside linebackers really hard. I thought for sure he was going to take somebody out of that group. But, Georgia has a long history. I can't remember the number, but it's one of the highest in the country, of players they've put in the NFL. And it's just been a good jumping off point, you know, for whatever reason, translated well in the NFL. And I think, Bill Belichick and his personnel people, obviously they recognize good players. And I believe they got two good ones in Wynn and Sony Michel.
Yeah, and you mentioned Ben Watson. They also got a pretty good one in the opening round, a defensive player named Richard Seymour under Bill Belichick, as we visit with Chip Towers of DogNation.com and the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. I want to go back to Isaiah Wynn, and you touched on the move from guard to tackle and the concerns a lot of people have about the lack of height. Yet he's got long arms and, as you said, good feet. Is the feeling, at least down there, whether it's on the Georgia staff or what you infer from them, that he is a guy, especially based on the way he protected the passer in the SEC, who could be a tackle in the National Football League?
Well, I'm eager to see that. I thought for sure that he was going into the NFL as a guard, and then so I was surprised by the news that came out of the Patriots that it's for tackle they're looking at him. But I think more than anything, what they're going to have is an extremely versatile offensive lineman, whatever the future may hold. I think that, the Patriots will find out and everybody else will find out whether he can do it on that level. I mean, from here, the question is, man, why didn't you have this guy playing left tackle before? Because he was playing guard for Georgia and obviously did a great job of it, an all-SEC guy in previous seasons as well. But they moved him out there, like I said, out of necessity, and they had been playing, John Theus and the typical 6'6", 350-pound guy out there. And he's a big reason. Let's be clear that Georgia, made it to the national championship game because he was protecting the blind side of Jake Fromm, and he just didn't let anything get through. I mean, hardly ever. And if you want to see a tape, there's two. Obviously in the game in Mobile, the Senior Bowl is where he created so much buzz, but. Watch the tape of the Alabama game. Alabama has, probably the best defensive, well, no question, the best defensive line in college football. And he just absolutely owned them in that game. And I think that's what everybody saw is between hands and feet. He's just going to get out there between you. And he is a lethally smart guy. You're not going to outthink him most of the time. And he was great at catching that inside move after a guy's been coming outside the whole game. It'll be a great experiment, but at the least, I think it's a worthy cause, because if it doesn't work out, you get yourself you got an all-pro guard. I don't think there's any question about that.
And, Chip, you talked about Sony Michel's abilities as well in the passing game, a versatile player and versatility valued so highly in New England. However, there are some concerns expressed by people in the media including Mike Lombardi, who has connections with New England. Nonetheless, the Patriots, despite what he discussed regarding Sony Michel's knee and potential medical issues, they took him in the first round. Does that tell you that Sony Michel's knee is not a problem going forward? And what do you know about that condition and his ability to contribute on the NFL and his ability to be a durable player in the National Football League?
Well, it certainly never limited him at Georgia. Now, one of the things that I think Georgia does better than a lot of colleges is you're probably familiar with this, but, I mean, they recruit a lot of backs. You know, so Sony Michel is playing with Nick Chubb, and you know, Elijah Holyfield, Evander Holyfield's son is here, and DeAndre Swift, who's a sophomore coming back from up there in Philadelphia. You know, they go by committee. So the best thing about Sony and most of the backs that come out of Georgia is the wear and tear. Georgia doesn't, they're not going to give the ball to one guy 40 times. They believe in tailback committee. They believe in five stars by committee, though. And that's certainly what they're hanging their hat on. So Sony has less wear and tear on him than the typical 4-year star, college tailback. But the other thing where he's, I mean, I never saw his knee create any problem. We didn't know much about a knee down here. His most significant injury was broken arm, suffered in an ATV accident, which kept him out of a couple of games to start the 2015 season, I believe it was. You know, he never let it slow him down here at Georgia. And where he has made the most strides, I think, is in strength and power, because he was always thought of as an outside kind of slash guy, out of the backfield guy, while Chubb was Mr. Inside. But he really showed a lot of good work inside the tackles this past year. He's much bigger and much stronger than when he showed up. Very similar to Chubb, really, physically in a lot of ways.
And Chip Towers, the Patriots will address maybe any off-road adventures in the contract language with Sony Michel.
That's probably a good idea, yeah.
Let me ask you about the defensive tackle, John Atkins. Reportedly, he's signing with the Patriots as an undrafted free agent, 6'3", 321 pounds.
Yeah, I mean, and a real block of granite in Georgia's defensive line on this national championship run, both as a metaphorically and realistically. I mean, John Axe is a great guy. John is what they call him down here. They call him John. I don't know why. I never asked him, but everybody calls him John. Great kid. I mean, he's an old guy. I mean, he's been 6 years, if you count it. He went to prep school, and so he was a little bit slow to develop. But that's actually a real concern for Georgia, because he was such a stalwart inside, a total zero technique, one technique guy. Tie blockers, plays through pain, obviously loves the contact, a great kid, great family. At senior day at the University of Georgia, they all come down and you know, and come on the field, and they're individually honored along with their family. Most people had four or five people. John Atkins, who wore 97 for Georgia, so they did it numerically, was the last at the end. He must have had 30 people down there on the field with him. So he comes from a big, strong family. And, you know, I think he's a guy that's gonna hang in the league. I honestly do, because he's got the size and he knows how to play that position and he knows what's required. Roquan Smith, as everybody knows, first rounder. Roquan Smith will tell you one of the reasons that he was able to have the year that he was able to have and win the Buckus Award was because John Atkins was in there tying up blockers every game.
Hey, Chip, no surprise that Roquan Smith or Nick Chubb went as high in the draft as they did, both top 35 players. Were you surprised that Lorenzo Carter, who some projected to the Pats, went as late as 66th overall to the Giants?
Yeah, there were a lot of surprises. I mean, Georgia had six overall after having three on the first day and five in the first two rounds. I was surprised that more of those guys didn't get taken, and Lorenzo Carter in particular. I mean, I think he is an unbelievable physical specimen. There was always questions about his heart and everything, you know, and he had a hard time putting on weight early in his career. Great basketball player, unbelievably athletic. But look, he made play after play for Georgia on that defense as a senior, and I really was surprised he didn't go there. That's a real value pick that they were able to get with him. And overall, Georgia only had six players drafted, so they have a lot of guys like Atkins, Davin Bellamy, Trent Thompson, who I think there were some off-field concerns about him defensive tackle who didn't get drafted at all, came out as a junior. In all, there were at least 12 players off of Georgia's team that were seriously evaluated and got a look. And out of that, only six of them got drafted. So, but Georgia's got a long history of free agents making it in the NFL, just like that guy playing center for you guys. So I think we'll see a lot of them make it with teams. And I think Lorenzo Carter will have a good NFL career, but when it's all said and done.
Yeah, Chip, I have a feeling that the Bulldogs, who are currently in Foxborough, are going to have a lot of company down the road as well. And the first impression by Sony and Isaiah on their first visit to Foxborough really validates your impressions as well. Thanks so much for your insights. Appreciate the time.
You got it. Take care.
Okay, Chip Towers from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution and DogNation.com with us. A little later on, we'll hear from Chris Price of the Boston Sports Journal. More next on the NFL Draft Show after this on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Breaking it all down. This is the NFL Draft Show. Brought to you by Carrier. Turn to the experts on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
None of us really know how this is going to go. It goes back to some of the same things. Trust your evaluations. Hopefully you find good players with good traits for our program, and then once they get here, are they going to work hard? Are they going to improve? Are they going to take the coaching? And is their performance going to be commensurate with that progress? And then if they, you know, make some progress, I mean, not to use like a guy like Julian as an example, you know, here's a guy, seventh round pick. I mean, when we drafted him, like, I mean, for us to sit here and say, yeah, we knew what we had, I mean, it's kind of imbecilic. I mean, I don't think that, like, none of us can say that, but you're going off the athletic skills, you're going off the traits, and then Julian showed at minicamp, okay, showed up, you know, showed some good thing, rookie minicamp, okay, and it took him couple years, and you know, now Julian's been one of our, you know, best, most consistent, most productive players over the course of his time here. So it's a long process, it takes a bunch of time, you know, we don't have infinite amount of time, and you know, you just want to see players make progress and move in the right direction. So the time to do that is, you know, a little bit further on down the road once you have a little more information to make an assessment.
That's Patriots player personnel director Nick Cassero yesterday reminding us of the relevance of day after draft grades. We'll do it nonetheless a bit later on during our show. As one college coach once said about recruits, same goes for draft picks. They all come highly recommended. What we can decipher, though, I believe, and others too, based on what I've seen on social media and written in newspaper columns and online, is that those inside the game were not as high on this class as many of us outside it, especially the defensive pool of players. After Tennessee traded up to select Rashawn Evans, there was a run, the end of the first round and through the middle portion of the second round, on offensive players, and many of them, interestingly, after the Patriots selected Wynn and Michelle, on interior offensive linemen specifically and running backs. It suggests, as teams stay true to their draft boards around the league looked very similar. We've already discussed the top two choices for the Pats out of Georgia, Isaiah Wynn and Sony Michel. So let's move on to days two and three, and we'll start in the second round with number 56 overall, Duke Dawson out of Florida. He considered coming out early after his junior season. He decided to stay, and here's a guy who played in a defensive backfield populated by current NFL players and good players at that. And Dawson seems to be a guy who would be a good fit in the slot if all works out well. We expect him to come into New England and compete for a nickel cornerback spot. Patriots should be in pretty good shape, I believe, on the outside, certainly with Stephon Gilmore and Eric Rowe and a guy like Jason McCourty. And then you've got Dawson coming into camp, a guy who will be in competition with Osiris Jones and Jonathan Jones and other players of that caliber, again, for that nickel cornerback spot, it seems, at least on the surface. Here's his reaction to getting a phone call from Bill Belichick a couple of days ago.
It was so surreal. I mean, me and all my family members, we just watching TV. And at the time, I was just looking at all the picks to see what was going on. And I kind of got caught in just watching the football players and the plays. And all of a sudden, my phone started ringing. But then I seen a Massachusetts area code. And when I seen that, my heart just started beating. And I just got so excited. And once I got on the phone and talked to Coach Belichick and talked to the general manager, I mean, it just felt so surreal, man. I mean, it's been a dream come true since I was little, just being able to fulfill my dreams.
And again, this is a player from the Southeastern Conference, where the Patriots go with three SEC picks to start things off. Then with their next two picks, they opt again to stay in the power conferences, first with Purdue and then Arizona State. selecting a pair of linebackers, though different linebacking types. Juwan Bentley out of Purdue, fifth-round pick. Christian Sam from Arizona State, taken in the sixth round. Now, Sam's a former defensive back in high school. He moves well. He's aggressive, played under Todd Graham. Some draftniks have suggested this guy was not the most inspired practice player, which seems at odds to me with the Patriots selecting him, because this draft, it seems, when you look at it on whole, suggests once again that the Patriots valued character. And we'll get to Bentley in a moment on that very topic. And also, Todd Graham is very close to Bill Belichick, and Graham was seen in the spring out in Patriots paraphernalia making the college rounds as well. So you expect that Graham had some input with the Patriots staff that carried a lot of weight with it with regards to Christian Sam. So the fact that he played under Graham comes from a good program. This is a guy, again, who moves well, was once a cornerback, then a safety in high school. Arizona State considered playing him at defensive back. He has potential to really help this team. Bentley, big physical player, self-described thumper. He comes highly recommended from a former Patriots linebacker with Purdue and Indiana ties, Roosevelt Colvin, also a guy that able to glean some advice from Rob Ninkovich, Matt Light, and others with Purdue ties at various alumni functions. Again, comes from a good pedigree when you talk about the college program. But also, Nick Cassero said, you're going to love meeting this guy. He was a three-time captain at Purdue under two different head coaches. Here's what he has to say about the meaning of being a three-time captain, first ever in Purdue football history.
It means a lot. One, because it's player selected, and it caused, especially my first time being a captain as a sophomore, that really was a big deal, because you're leading guys who are sometimes 5 years older than you, and for them to trust you with that kind of responsibility definitely shows you how much they believe in you and what they think you're capable of.
And with the Patriots' second pick in the sixth round, number 210 overall, they chose receiver and punt returner Braxton Berrios of Miami. Very smart kid. One sub-A grade in college, 3.96 grade point average. But more than that, the skill set that many believe is in the same mold, not necessarily right now, of course, on the same caliber, but in the same kind of mold as Wes Welker, Danny Amendola, Julian Edelman, guys who have played the position for the Patriots, and he's well aware of that.
They've done an incredible job. And finding, you know, getting handed that role and working it to a master level, you know, obviously I've seen them, I watch them, you know, I study them, and along with a lot of other guys in the league, and no, they've done an incredible job, and you know, I'm really excited to learn some things.
In the seventh round, Patriots' first pick, number 219, Danny Etling, quarterback of LSU, transferred from Purdue. Finished his career playing under four different offensive coordinators and head coaches. Had a 60% completion rate last year, 16 touchdowns versus just two interceptions, something that Cassario pointed out, something the Patriots value a great deal, accuracy along with protecting the football. Now he gets to learn behind one of the best, certainly the all-time great, in Tom Brady in those two categories.
It's just an opportunity to learn from the greatest quarterback, so, you know, you don't expect anything. You have no expectations going in. You're just going in to learn. You just sit there and take in as much as you can, absorb as much, you know, information as you can, and just continue to keep improving, continue to prepare for your opportunity when it comes. And you want to just watch a guy who's so great and has been so great. When you want to know how he does it, and you want to just, and you're going to be in that room just not only with Tom, but with Brian Hoyer, someone else who's been, you know, around the league and has really continued to have great success. And it's such a great quarterback room, and I'm so excited to be a part of it. I can't wait to just continue to learn and grow as a quarterback and a person.
And I mentioned the fact that Etling played in different systems under different coaches at two different programs, so he's shown the ability to learn different offenses, grasping concepts, but also the ability to read coverages. Going in the SEC and going up against Nick Saban's defense, Kirby Smart's, and others in that conference, as a quarterback to throw only two interceptions last year, again, that speaks well of his ability to adapt as a QB. Here's what he had to say about processing information, and again, making the adjustments he had to during college, and how that will help him on this level.
I've had four different OCs. I've had a lot of different coaches, and all of them have been very demanding of me. All of them have been great. They expect a lot out of me, and they expect a lot of hard work. And along the way, I've had a lot of coaches to thank for that. And learning four different offenses isn't easy. Learning four different terminologies isn't easy. So It was quite the process, and it really ended up helping me along the way because, you know, when teams ask you to process the information quickly when they test you, I was able to hopefully do that better than a lot of other people and end up impressing some teams.
And the Patriots certainly impressed. What did Etling's aptitude and ability to adapt to different offenses do in the minds of Nick Caserio and the Patriots?
One of the things you look for, too, with some of these players is how they handle transition, you know, because in that particular case, multiple coaches, multiple coordinators, multiple offenses. So how do they handle that? You know, are they adaptable? Can they adjust? Look, this game is about being adaptable, being versatile, and, you know, 1 week the game plan might be this, and next week the game plan might be something different. So how quickly can you handle that? Can you process that? Can you understand that? Can you apply it and take that information? So there were some examples and some evidence of him doing that, and that's something that Danny worked on. I mean, to his credit, mechanics, especially a quarterback, like, your mechanics are something you continually to – I mean, Tom works on his mechanics as much as anybody, and he's been playing quarterback for, I mean, 18 years, I mean, longer than that. But so he made – even you notice from his play at LSU here during the season and then kind of through the spring and even hit his pro day, you know, you saw some subtle adjustments or subtle things that he did to help improve his mechanics. And obviously, that's kind of through whatever coach he was working with. So now we kind of have to throw that out the window, and, you know, we have a baseline that we're starting with him. So when he gets here, Josh and Jerry will spend time with him and work on, identify the areas. Okay, here are the things that, you know, A, B, and C. Okay, here are the things you're going to focus on initially. Okay, deal with that. And then once we have that sort of improved or a comfort level, then we can move on to the next thing. So, but the ability, a quarterback, our system is a pretty complex system. I mean, it's no mystery. Okay, there's a lot that we put on the players. There's a lot that we put on the quarterback. So smart, adaptable, handle transitions, handle adjustments, do it quickly, and be able to process and move to the next thing. I mean, those are things that are important, that are required of that position, especially here in our offense.
And Etling's mechanical fine-tuning done in California, by the way, under Tom House, the throwing coach, of course, for Tom Brady. Final two picks for the Patriots were cornerback Keon Crossan from Western Carolina. Small conference player, small player, not very big at that position, certainly, but very fast, very agile. His measurables when it came to three-cone, the shuttle, again, the 40-yard dash, extremely impressive. Tight end Ryan Izzo out of Florida State, the final pick for the Patriots, more of a blocking tight end. Coming up, Chris Price from the Boston Journal talks about those players and more. But first, Marshall Hook has your headlines here on the 98.5, the Sports Hub NFL Draft Show.
Breaking it all down. This is the NFL Draft Show. Brought to you by Carrier. Turn to the experts on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Team building is an ongoing process. So there's no template. There's no book that tells you, we'll do this, and this is what's going to happen. Like, you know, we just try to be prepared, try to take all the information that we have, and try to make the best decision for the organization possible.
That's Patriots Player Personnel Director Nick Caserio. He says there's no template or book. But I did read the book, The Blueprint, about the Patriots' success in building a dynasty, as well as Drive for Five, recapping the fifth championship for the New England Patriots, written by Chris Price, now the Boston Sports Journal. You can follow him on Twitter at CPriceNFL, and he's with us right now. Chris, thanks for the time this morning. Are you in transit to a ball game?
Not yet.
Okay.
We are about to head out to the door to a little 7th grade AAU baseball. So I'm glad I got the chance to talk with you. And that was about as an adept a transition as I've ever heard, my friend.
Well, I appreciate it. And I'm glad I'm going to have a chance to spend some family time outdoors after basically 3 days in the media workroom at Gillette Stadium. I'm going to start with a statement and a question, Chris. I thought a lot of the questions people had about the Patriots after day one of this draft were answered by the middle of the next day by everybody else around the NFL. Everybody seemed to have an opinion about defensive talent past the top handful of players in this draft. And same thing with quarterbacks. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that there is some truth to that, especially when you consider, you know, this is a team that really needed linebacking depth. And you know, we all thought that they may have gone for a linebacker, namely Rashawn Evans there at number 23, but they were able to kind of get guys like Bentley and Sam to kind of fill in. I imagine those guys, at least initially, are going to be special team types who are going to maybe challenge the likes of Landon Roberts for a job at the middle part of that depth chart. But I think specifically when you're talking about defense, I think a lot of people wanted to see this team improve on the defensive side of the ball. And for the most part, Belichick kind of flipped it around on him, though. I think, you know, when you look at Wynn and Michelle, those are two guys who have a chance to contribute relatively early on in their NFL careers. And then, you know, Etling, it's he's a developmental guy. The guy who I really want to see, and I'm really fascinated here, other than the top three, you know, the rest of the picks, is Braxton Berrios, mm-hmm. the kid out of Miami, because he offers a really intriguing skill set on a number of levels, not just as a slot receiver, but as a guy who can, contribute immediately as a special teams punt returner. So a lot of really intriguing prospects there. So I guess ultimately to answer your question, some of the concerns, the thoughts, the priorities were answered, but I do think that there's still some questions about this team going forward.
Oh, and you touched on the linebacker competition and how the two draft picks might intensify that competition for guys who've been on this roster, like Elandon Roberts. Same at wide receiver. It's going to be a very interesting camp at that particular position. And then there's the secondary, the battle for that third, fourth corner spot now for the Patriots, and what that does for guys who've been on this roster in the past, like Cyrus and Jonathan Jones. Are those the areas that you see being where the most intense competition will be in the spring and summer?
Yeah, I really do. I agree with you there. I forgot to mention earlier on about Duke Dawson, because I do think that Duke Dawson is going to be the kind of guy who is going to compete maybe for that third, fourth cornerback job, that slot corner, that nickel corner that you're going to see between Dawson, Jonathan Jones, and Cyrus Jones. I think are pretty good battle for playing time there at the back end of that depth chart. So there are a handful of really intriguing positional battles here that are starting to shape up, at least in as we sit here in late April. One of the questions, maybe above all others, when it comes to that, is where do they see Wynn? Because you can see Wynn as a guard and maybe challenging Joe Tooney, Shaq Mason, or do you see him as a developmental tackle? And part of that conversation over on the left side with Adrian Waddle and Tony Garcia, depending on where he is, as well as Trent Brown. So there's a number of different options there. They've left themselves some flexibility when it comes to that. I think that they're treating the tackle position this year, specifically the left tackle position this year, like they treated the wide receiver position the last few years, where they sign a bunch of guys, they sift through people who can play and who can't play, and then they'll go into September with a relatively good idea as to who's going to be over there.
Chris Price with us from the Boston Sports Journal. You've got a great grasp of Patriots history and do a wonderful job. I don't know what kind of database you have, but in really comparing past versus present. And you talk about Isaiah Wynn. He is short for the tackle position, but how does he measure in other areas with guys who've played that spot, whether full-time like Matt Light, or even part-time when the Patriots needed a Logan Mankins to kick out? He was a tackle in college. Or even Brian Stork, from my recollection a couple of years ago, forced to play tackle for a game.
I am not going to put this on him at this infant stage of his career, but after watching a little bit more film on Wynn, you bring up his versatility, the fact that, he does remind you a little bit in that aspect of a guy like Mankins. I think that's the ceiling for him, that he's not only a big, tough guy, but a guy who can move around a little bit on that offensive line. And we all know that Dante Scarnecchia loves those guys, those guys who can play multiple positions. The Patriots love those guys. We've heard Dante say on a number of occasions, look, you can only take seven guys to a game, and so you're going to have a couple guys who might be able to fill in at both spots. And so I think at this stage of his career, it's reasonable to assume that Isaiah Wynn, at the very least, will be one of those guys. But again, I want to kind of manage expectations around him. Put him in the same conversation as Logan Mankins right now is extraordinary, because as we all remember, Mankins was pretty much a day one starter. So I don't want to go that far yet. But in terms of toughness, the positional versatility, and the ability to play both of those positions at a very high level, I think that's what makes him a really intriguing prospect for this team.
Hey, Chris, a lot of uncertainty surrounding the Patriots entering this draft, and the two principals at the center of so much speculation and a lot of questions, Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski. What does the Patriot draft, if anything, tell you about how the Patriots view their futures in their eyes?
They're confident that they're coming back. I think that the tight end would have been a far greater priority if there was continued uncertainty around the situation involving Gronkowski as it relates to 2018. The same thing is true for Brady, although lesser, because I think that we all pretty much assumed that he was coming back. I think the greater question, at least going into this past week, was Gronkowski. And I would have thought that they would have been far more involved on the tight end market if there was some concern about whether or not he was going to play in 2018. So that should give Patriots fans, a reason to be happy if you're looking for, glasses half full positive takes here coming out of this draft that, you're confident you're going to have Brady for 2018. You're confident you're going to have Gronkowski for 2018. And then the other thing that I thought was really interesting in the context of this conversation, a couple of people brought up online yesterday, including Mike Reese and Eric Edholm, that this really sets up to look like that Bill Belichick is coming back in 2019, because he wouldn't have traded out of the 2018 draft like a madman if he wasn't. So I think when you look at the principals, when you look at the guys who have been at the center of a little bit of this off-season drama, the moves that were made over the last 3 days suggest to me that they're all cool with each other coming back in 2018.
Hey, and Chris, one other point to be made about 2019 and beyond, and the Patriots picked up 3 draft selections for next year's draft, is that nobody trades more than Bill Belichick and the Patriots. And as Nick Cassero just reminded us, team building is fluid. It's constant. So they have assets for the future with which they can deal to acquire guys who can help them in the present, whether that's just before the start of the season, just before the trade deadline, or, in fact, before next year's draft.
Exactly. And we saw it this year. We saw them make moves just prior to the start of the 2017 season that involved them dealing away draft picks. Whether it was, they were relatively low-level moves, Cassius Marsh, Johnson Batamosi, those kind of deals, but they left themselves some flexibility to, if they feel like they've been caught shorthanded at a position in, say, the last week of August, they can go out and use some of that draft capital. The other thing, too, that, look, I'm not going to put anything past this team. The other possibility, too, is they are loading up on draft picks for something next year. They've already identified someone out there next year in 2019 who they think would be a good fit for this team. So, look, in the short term, I know this doesn't answer a lot of people's questions, and there's some concerns going into the season at this stage on the calendar. But I think that the draft flexibility that they have given themselves next year is certainly intriguing enough. I told people last night online to start Googling, 2019 NFL draft or quarterback draft class. And I know Mel Kiper's already got his big board up. So it's something to look forward to. I don't think it gives people a lot of comfort when it relates to, the coming season. But again, as you mentioned, that flexibility leaves themselves, they give themselves some wiggle room if they do find themselves up against it before the start of the regular season.
Hey, Chris Price, finally, before I let you go, at this stage, even with those concerns, is your coffee mug half full or half empty?
It's half full for a few reasons, not the least of which, I mean, really, if this team stays healthy, let's take a hard look at the rest of the AFC. If this team stays healthy, if you get Dante Hightower back, if you get Edelman back, if Gronkowski can play, 12 games, the more important games, if Brady is healthy, if both McCourties are there, if Chung is ready to go, look, this is still an 11-12 win team in my estimation, and that puts you right in the conversation for that number one seed in the AFC. So I don't think it's so much of what the Patriots are doing or not doing. I think when you start to look around the league, specifically the AFC, I don't see another team that has surpassed them, at least to this point in the calendar.
Hey, Chris Price, fuel up and have a great day with the kid. Thanks so much.
Sounds good. Take care, Bob.
Our friend Chris Price from the Boston Sports Journal with us. We'll wrap things up right after this on the 98.5 NFL Draft Show.
Breaking it all down. This is the NFL Draft Show. Brought to you by Carrier. Turn to the experts on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Welcome to my house. Baby, take control now. We can't even slow down. We don't have to go wild. Welcome to my house.
In the 2018 NFL Draft, the New England Patriots select Isaiah Wynn, tackle, Georgia.
Run between the tackles again, then Michelle busts loose across the 40, and the Dogs are just driving it right at Bama.
Watch the left side of this offensive line. Isaiah Wynn, left 77, Baker. I love how Wynn, who's a former guard, has such a comfortable feel to him and being able to come down and help once it's secured on the defensive lineman. Patiently works up to that linebacker, and when you get movement on Alabama at the defensive line move spot, you're going to get a chance to get some big yards running the football. It's just rare to see.
I mean, it's great just to continue on this new journey, open this new chapter of our lives. We started off together. I knew him since high school, rooming with him at a rivals camp. So just to get here and open this new chapter, I mean, it's unbelievable.
With the 31st pick in the 2018 NFL Draft, the New England Patriots select Sony Michel, running back, Georgia.
Not on this one. Sony Michel, he's going to earn it all, I think, Gary. Sony Michel trying to outrun Florida, and does. Touchdown.
It's what advertised. I mean, it's a wonderful place to be. Excited to be here. When I landed this morning, I was just, smiles. Just the biggest smile on my face, just to know that, I'm coming to a great place, that cares about football, a great organization, and it's going to be a wonderful experience.
Great music choice. Hear that montage from producer Dan Lifshack, Flo Rida, providing the backdrop to the sounds of Sony Michel and Isaiah Wynn. And I think it's appropriate because the Patriots, with their top three selections, not just the top two, well, they went to the world's largest outdoor cocktail party. They picked two Georgia Bulldogs and a player from Flo Rida in defensive back Duke Johnson. I will apologize for that horrible pun to close things out in this NFL draft review show, Marshall.
I like hearing you say Flo Rida. There's something about you talking about Flo Rida that makes me very, very happy.
You should see me dance to it. Hey, that's going to do it for us. And, on that note, talked about those three players in particular. Again, time will tell how this draft class grades out for the Patriots. But you look at the possibility, even if Isaiah Wynn can play offensive tackle on the NFL level and shifts inside, the Patriots in the first round got themselves a pair of guys who should be big contributors to this offense, and if not in 2018 down the road on the offensive interior, if not a tackle, and of course as a potential three down back, and a guy who could be a game breaker too, a guy who can give them a different dimension at that position, as a guy who can run inside the tackles and be a factor as well in the passing game now in the absence of Deion Lewis, who became a Tennessee Titan. Beyond that, a competition, as we talked about with Chris Price, at various spots in this training camp to come should be very interesting, especially at that slot cornerback position. This is an era in the NFL where there's an extra defensive back or two on the field almost all the time. And so it'll be fun to watch Duke Dawson as well as Keon Crossan and the guys who are already here in New England compete. I think you also have to factor in players like Derek Rivers, along with Harvey Longhi, other guys from that rookie class of a year ago, like, for example, Tony Garcia, assuming that he's on the road to recovery at his premium, his peak physically, that those guys are going to have a shot as well to make some strides in the coming months in OTAs and in training camp to help the Patriots in 2018 and beyond. Also, it, I think, raises the excitement levels Chris Price touched on for 2019. What the Patriots have acquired, whether it's for trade purposes or to move up in next year's draft, if they've got a guy in mind they might want to target come this time, 2019. And we'll be back here in Brighton to talk about it, of course, a year from now when we look forward to that draft. But as we say goodbye and recapping this year's draft, special thanks to our guest today, Chip Towers from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution and DogNation.com, Chris Price, of course, from Boston Sports Journal, and for the people who put the show together, in particular, Tom Carroll and Dan Lifshatz. And thanks, as always, to Marshall Hook, simply for being Marshall Hook.